It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
And hello everybody, welcome along, another edition of the Cricket Badger podcast and the Gareth Ian YouTube channel as well. James and Lucas, we maybe get Gareth as well, but there's heavy rain in Mumbai, it's affecting his technology, so we maybe see Gareth in just a second. But Lucas, 2-0 up, congratulations, boo hiss, all the rest of it.
We're up 2-0, but I didn't have the same enthusiasm as I did when we went 1-0 up. I think we got lucky, very lucky today. We'll get more into that shortly. But it's almost a bittersweet. Yeah, we're up 2-0. England need to win 3 tests, but I'm not really going to brag about. Oh, I picked 5-0 and all that today. So lots to go through.
Yeah, I mean, just looking back across, I mean, there's a lot to talk about, isn't there? Even just from day 5, there's a lot to talk about. I felt from an English perspective to this test match that England had chances, some real chances to actually get ahead of Australia and keep on top. And we saw how close it was towards the end. You know, England were not that far short in the end. I never thought they'd get that close, to be honest. But there was nearly another Ben Stokes heroic passage, Headingley 2019-esque, wasn't there? But obviously he fell and the rest of the tail fell as well. Too much was to be done by them. But I felt in England's first innings in particular, the Bazball bravado just got bonkers big. You know, the short ball, taking on the short ball, holding out in the deep, no lessons learnt, brainless cricket. I don't know if you saw the clip of Jeff Boycott in the stands after Harry saved the ball to extra cover and Boycott was there with his head in his hands, kind of shaking his head. That I think that's how a lot of people felt. We spoke at the start of the series, Lucas, about Bazball versus Ozball kind of thing, two different mentalities, which one's going to come out on top. And I just think that England in that first innings, they got carried away with their own height.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. But also mentioned this, you know, before the series, that Australia are relentless with their plans. They're not going to be defensive. They're not going to be pushed out of the way. They are going to stick to their plans. Now, we saw that in the first test where they went very defensive in the first innings, second innings. And they did the same thing this innings with this short ball tactic, which almost got them undone. We'll get that into later. But with England's way they play this Bazball nonsense, whatever you want to call it, there's no way to combat it. You know, it was a bit like Australia and India when they just started sweeping. There wasn't a light switch just to turn off, stop. Let's just stop for a couple of overs. And they were just dropping like flies. And some of the deliveries that they're hitting to the fielders weren't really, you know, they weren't that short. You know, they were just hitting there just for the sake of it. And Australia thought, well, this is working. We're going to go with it. So they deliberately set Steve Smith in, around about either in or 45, daring the English batsmen to go over him. And as we saw with Harry Brook, who just completely had a brain fade, just lobbed it over to mid off. Mid on. There was nothing there to say stop.
You were right the first time. It was extra cover, really, wasn't it? But the looking where we were obviously jumping into England's first innings ahead of Australia's, but yeah, replying to Australia's 400 plus in the first innings, 325 in the end, all out after being 188 for one, and 91 for none. England got off to a really good start. And the openers, I mean, Ben Duckett, I think, has played really well in this this test match. Harry Brook made 50 almost despite how he played. And then the wheels came off, just holing out in the deep. And I got the impression from the way, I mean, he obviously didn't kick on the day afterwards, but Ben Stokes ended up with 17 off 58 balls. And he was not out on a strike rate of about 28 overnight. Didn't add to that. But and then today, until he had to put the foot down, he batted far more sensibly. I tweeted earlier that if he played like that, you could see him at England's number three, because he is a better player than he's been showing. And during the Buzzball times, he's come off a few times, he's hit some sixes, but he's tending to shut his eyes, swing, and just hope for the best, where he's a far better player than that. But it was almost like a message he was sending to the other people, Luke, other batters in the side, Lucas, that we can play responsibly. Buzzball or whatever we brand this, our new positive kind of cricket isn't reckless. And they were reckless in that first innings.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head, you're absolutely right. When they're only one down for that score, I thought, wow, they're gonna match Australia in the batting. They might lead. Like I said, they just capitulated with that short ball nonsense. Ben Stokes, he did kind of the same in the second innings in the first test, where he batted progressively. And I thought, and at that time I thought, that's weird, considering everything he said about Jonathan Trott.
I thought he actually batted sensibly. He batted using his brain. He treated the bowlers with respect when he needed to.
Yeah.
He hit the bad balls for runs. And obviously in the second innings, when he was running out of partners, he went into headingly mode and tried to get England across the line. But, you know, he's got different gears. But I tend to find in the Buzzball era, he's come in, say his car's got six gears. He's come in and started on fourth gear, gone into fifth and sixth too early, and then got himself out sometimes. Whereas in this innings, in this test match, he's come in, played in first and second gear, seen how the land lies, and he's gradually gone up a little bit. And I reckon that's far more sensible than the way he's been playing of late.
Well, I think it's more sensible in general, because like I said before the series, this is a world-class attack. This is the most explosive attack that they will come across. You know, with Pakistan, was pretty benign in Pakistan. India had injuries. South Africa, apart from Nokia, not really explosive. But this is the first time that they've had four bowlers bowling 140 kilometres per hour or 90 miles per hour.
Oh, there's no respite to that, because they
exactly. It's relentless. It's relentless pressure.
And they went to the short ball strategy in that first innings. Yeah. And sometimes if you're playing county cricket, there might be one guy coming at you hard.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, if you can ride out his five overs, you've got maybe a bit of an easier ride for the next half an hour. You didn't get that against Australia in this test.
No, exactly. You don't get that against India. You don't get that against New Zealand when it comes to pace. You get it in other ways against New Zealand with Wagner and that. You don't get that in Pakistan. Shaheen Afridi, maybe one, or Nasim Shah. But like, so these are three bowlers that bowl the 140. Well, then you got Cameron Green. So Cameron, you think, oh, well, I'm done to these guys. Cameron Green comes on, bowls 140 clicks. But Ben Stokes batted very well, I thought. Just wanted to slow the Aussie bowlers down. Wanted to rear them out. And by God, did he do that in the second innings? I think it's sensible. I think it's kind of funny at the same time, because when he said all that nonsense about Cook and Jonathan Trott, where they bat, he comes out and bats like that. He almost contradicts himself in a way.
Yeah. I think he's just woken up a little bit. They've always talked about how kind of stretching the line and taking this Buzzball, they don't call it Buzzball, but taking Buzzball as far as they can possibly take it and trying to work out where that line is. And I guess when they're talking about the line, they're talking about the line between attacking, creative, entertaining, and reckless, stupid, and foolish. And I think in the first innings, they went into the latter category. And they've actually probably, I don't know if they've had team talks, I don't know if they discuss. I just wonder, like I say, a few of the players in there starting to believe their own hype, think they're invincible with no repercussions. And actually, maybe being a bit shocked by the, because I said at the start of this series, I said to you, I think on our preview, if England are 2-0 down after Lords, will there be a massive inquest into Buzzball? Mm. Well, that inquest started in that first innings.
Yeah.
Because people, I mean, maybe even a little bit after the first test match, but a lot of people were saying, well, look at all the test matches we've won, it's only one game. But after the first innings at Lords, there was a lot more dissenting voices saying, this is just reckless, this is just stupid. And they say they don't read the press, they say they don't look at social media, but they do. And they will have maybe just started to think, maybe there aren't any repercussions inside the dressing room, but there are repercussions in the way the public is seeing us now.
Well, isn't it funny after one match, losing one match, how, you know, everything can change. The philosophy of coaching can change, or not so much change or broken, not tweaking is the correct word, tweaking, just after losing one match. It's just amazing how that happens, James, no matter who you are.
You saw Ray Orrell saying we're going to play this entertaining brand of cricket. Yeah. That's an admirable aim. And it's an entertainment industry at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, if you're selling tickets to the public, you're supposed to be entertaining them. But there is a line, isn't there? And there's also the public want to see their team win. And they want to see. And sometimes, test match crowds aren't stupid people. They know that there might be an hour where you have to slog it out and you have to face a Mitchell Starc knocking your head off and stuff like that. And you have to dig in and you have to show bravery. That's what Test cricket's about. It's about the test, the technique, the stamina, everything you've got about you as a human being, basically, gets tested in the test arena. You know, the public like to see those kind of challenges too. It's not all about a run rate of seven and over. I think there's maybe a little bit of a wake up. Hopefully there's a little bit of a wake up. I still want to see. I like the Baz Bull ethos. I like the fact that they want to take attacking options and stuff, but you still got to engage brains and show a little bit of sophistication and tailor your attack to the bowler you're facing, to the conditions you're faced with and the match situation at the same time, rather than just go out there and have a swing, basically.
Yeah. Well, you have to, because like I said, you know, you're going to get different conditions. Now, after the Ashes, England going to India. there's no way they're going to do that in India.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls.
If we steer this into the two talking points from today, or two of the talking points from the last couple of days, at the start of this, we can go back through the test match later. But the big talking point today was the Bairstow run out. That's what's basically kind of illuminated social media. I've been really disappointed, I guess, with people's reactions to that.
Yeah.
And also in the ground. The supporters that were in the ground, yes, it's a day five crowd and all the rest of it, so they'll have bought tickets on spec. But there's been like a football nature to that crowd. Mm. And I love, don't get me wrong, I love football. But the one thing I love about football sometimes is the football fans.
Yeah.
And today, all of this booing and the long room shenanigans as the Aussies walk back in at lunchtime, just to strip it right back, the Aussies did nothing wrong.
No.
Basically, Bairstow was dozing. He basically ground his bat, but basically Carey took the ball and in one motion threw the stumps down. Bairstow just kind of gave it a cursory glance to the stumps, but didn't look at Carey. If you turn around to Carey, you would have seen Carey preparing to throw his stumps down, and then he just moseyed up the track, which time he heard the death rattle behind him and he might take about two paces and realised there was an attempted run out. And so there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And you know, not to pump up myself, which I love doing, as the viewers might know, is that I'm a keeper myself. I've done that numerous times. Mm. The key word, the key thing in this is the most important thing. Carey got rid of it straight away. He threw the ball straight away. Now, if Carey would have thrown the ball to slip and then the slip threw it at the stumps, he might have a point. But he got rid of that ball as quick as possible. So we saw in replays before that, Johnny Bairstow was doing it a couple of times. Now, you can make an argument saying, why didn't Carey do it then? But keepers, they read types of plays. You know, it's they're probably outside the captain, the one fielder that can see what's going on the whole game, because they're constantly watching at things, looking at movements, looking at where fielders are, sometimes moving fielders. And maybe Kerry was just looking at Bairstow. Okay, I'll take a note of that. As we saw with replays, like I just said, there's a couple of times where Bairstow was out of his crease. And then Kerry said, I've had enough of this, I'm going to go for it, and quickly removed the ball. Quickly did as quick as possible. And that's what you call a long-range stumping. I've done it in cricket. I've taken a ball and I've had a throw. And in a way, it is no different to a batsman advancing to a fast bowl and a keeper quickly throwing it. It's no different.
I mean, a lot of people came out and said it's not in the spirit of cricket. Well, it's in the rules. I mean, I don't particularly like what we call mancads, colloquially mancads.
No, I hate them.
I don't like that. Yeah. To me, that feels like creeping up behind somebody and there's an element of skullduggery in that, in my opinion. But it's in the rules. If I was in charge of cricket, I would change those rules to change that dismissal. But it's in the rules, and therefore it is a legitimate dismissal. And this is even more so, in my opinion, is that it, the keeper's taken the ball. He's noticed that Bairstow's been wandering around. So he basically releases it straight away with the chance, because there's always a chance with that Bairstow might be 2 yards behind the stumps by the time he hits the stumps. But on that occasion, Bairstow has wandered away and he's basically stumped him, run him out, whatever it goes down in the book has. And somebody said to me, Lucas, and I think this is a really good point and a really good way of looking at it, is if Kerry had hurled the ball at the stumps and he'd missed, and there was no mid-off, and the ball had trickled away towards the boundary, are you telling me that Bairstow wouldn't have run 3 runs if he'd been able to? Of course he would. He would have seen the ball as being live then.
Yeah, of course, no. Not a shadow of a doubt. And I think something, I'm not sure this might be wrong, but I remember Colin de Gronholm, a similar thing happened where he was out of his crease. He got hit in the leg. Unfortunately, he was out of his crease. And then hit the stumps and ran out. There's nothing wrong with that either.
No.
Now you can throw sympathy towards him because he was injured, he couldn't get back. But that it's in the rules.
I was speaking to a former player today, Lucas, and their reaction was: you get told as a professional cricketer, you get told you look after your own wicket, you make sure you don't leave your crease until you know that ball is dead. And I don't know if you saw the, all of the commentators were basically agreeing what we're saying. And that it was a legitimate dismissal. Andrew Strauss was asked after the game today, would you have called back Johnny Bairstow? He said no, because it's a legitimate dismissal. It was done in one motion, and therefore I've got no issue with that at all. Yeah. And Simon Towfel, the former the umpire, one of the best umpires we've ever had, Simon Towfel, he basically said the way the law is the ball is only dead. Because there's a lot of people have sent me a screen grab of one part of the law where it says when it hits the keeper's gloves, that's when it's a dead ball. Well, no, it's not, because otherwise you would never have a stumping, would you? You'd never have anything that the keeper could do after the ball's hit his hands. And what Simon Towfel said is the ball is only dead when both teams effectively act like it is dead. And that is basically throwing the ball around the field or whatever, and the batsman batters moving, walking into the middle. At the time where Carey is taking that ball and then throwing the stumps down, he's not acting like that ball is dead. He's acting like that ball is very much alive.
Yeah. For me personally, when I'm batting, I always look at the keeper. Now, the trigger movement for me is when the ball is dead, is when the keeper throws it to slip or he throws it to point or whatnot. That's my trigger personally. Always been taught that. So I think, as you said, Bairstow was very dozy in that situation. Like I said, what really got me was why Kerry took so long. But having said that, maybe he didn't compute, because Johnny was doing it for a couple of deliveries.
Yeah. You mean why didn't he do it before?
Yeah, exactly. So, but like I said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's called a stumping. In the book, it was stumped Alex Carey, bowled Cameron Green. It's rare. You don't see it every often, but it's really no different to a bowler advancing down to the stumps to a fast bowl and then a keeper releasing it. That's still a stumping. The only difference is that Bairstow ran off his crease.
Basically, us two, all of the pundits on the telly, former umpires, we're all saying the same thing here. So basically, we decided this is a legitimate dismissal. Yeah, it's not against the spirit of the game. It's in the rules.
No,
it's in the scorebook. End of. But it spilled over, though, after that dismissal. Broad came in. as only Stuart Broad can really, and started mouthing off. And then I thought there was some really unpleasant. I've never seen it at Lord's, because Lord's is usually quite proper. The scenes at Lord's in the run up to lunchtime, and then when they went off for lunch, were horrendous for me. They, you know, we had the crowd booing and hissing and "You're always cheating, Aussies," or whatever the song is. We had the Aussies walking into the long room, turning right and going towards their staircase. Usman Khawaja and David Warner, I think, involved with words with some of the people in the long room who were heckling them and what have you. Yep. And I just, cricket can do without that. I mean, I don't know if you're aware, Lucas, but we've had in this, just to underline, apparently Usman Khawaja is saying nothing was racially motivated. It was about you're cheating, basically. But we've had this week the ICEC reports come out in England, racism, sexism, and elitism in cricket. And that's been proven in that report. And cricket's been given 44 things, I think, to actually try and do to sort that out, which is going to be a long process. It's not going to be a quick fix. But some of the stuff that around this test, I don't think has actually gone any way to actually disproving any of the doubters of the ICEC report. Some of the behaviour around the lunchtime and towards the Aussie tourists, I thought was very poor.
I thought it was embarrassment. And then not just to a broad man, it's Labor Shane. I know you're Australian, mate, but please shut the hell up.
Before you say that, because Tim's been in touch. He says Stokes said he would have withdrawn the dismissal claim. Well, that's his right to say that, isn't it? But there was nothing wrong with it.
I disagree with that, because he could have done that with Colin Dugono. So I disagree with that.
Well, I don't think Stokes was captain then, was he? I think it was probably Root. But
okay, fair enough. I apologise.
But Tim's basically saying Stokes in his post-match has said that he would have withdrawn it. Okay. If he would, then that's his decision. But I don't see where there was no reason to withdraw it.
I don't think he would. But that's a captain by captain thing. I don't think I would have. So if I was a captain, I'm a keeper. So I'm just dying for those wickets.
Before I flash up the Tim question or the Tim comment there, you were talking about Marnus Labuschagne. Jeez, I was commentating on day one. I was off on day two and I was watching at home. Oh. And you could hardly hear the commentators over him talking.
There's a difference between good banter and bad banter, you know, with Tim Payne, Rashid Pant. This guy is a menace. It's not just towards the bat, like I said, not towards the batsman. It's a commentary. Yeah. You can hear him.
He just can't shut up.
I made a tweet saying, if only he could back up his words with the bat, not his mouth. Because with all due respect, you know, he would be the last person to abuse Stuart Broad after, you know, having Stuart Broad's got him out twice. And Marnus Labuschagne has not made a run. He's been very disappointing so far, Marnus Labuschagne. Warner's been better than him.
He did go a bit quieter this afternoon.
There was a 10-minute period where Broad was making fun of the run out, putting his bat, saying, can I go? And then, Marnus was very quiet after that. It seemed to be a little bit more serious. Back to the actual, to the crowd, I don't mind the booing. I don't mind the chanting, because it happens mostly around the world, probably not in West Indies or Sri Lanka, because they don't have any fans to start with. No shot on them, but that's just true. But mainly in Australia and England. I don't mind the booing. I don't mind the cheat or the sandpaper or the "you saw you crying" on the telly, like they said to Steve Smith last test. I don't mind that. But when the key word that you used was elitism. When you're inside that building, you know, they are very elite members there, James. You know, they're not some guys off the street. They've been involved in members of cricket for a long, long time. And to see that, you know, them chanting, you know, cheat, that was a little bit disappointing.
I have to say, Lucas, some of the worst people I've ever met in cricket, and I've met quite a lot of people, some of the worst people I've met in cricket have been the ones with suits and ties on in the posh seats. Who think they almost own the game and can say whatever they like.
And really, in general, they should be leading by example. You know, these are 60, 70, 80-year-old men. And to be chanting that. Now, with the Khawaja incident with Warner, you know, as you said, Khawaja just came out and said it wasn't racist. it was more like, well, you cheated, and Usman took offence to that. Usman's a very laid-back guy. Let's not forget that. He's very laid-back. Takes a lot of something, like a lot of bottle for him to get a reaction. He's very timid. So obviously something was said along the lines of cheating, and Usman's taking offence to that. What was, I don't know. He didn't say. It's just, and then when they went upstairs, there was more members shouting abuse. You know that I didn't like that. I think keep that in the ground. Keep that in the ground.
I just think it's really, really, really poor. Yeah.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Gareth has been on. He's watching rather than joining us, and he's commenting on the feed here. You can too. If you want to send in your comments, then please do put your name on them. If you're doing it through Facebook, put your name on them, please. Baz, Brennan McCullum, has apparently done it twice when he was a keeper. So if England get the moral high ground too much, then maybe the footage of Brendan McCullum doing this in the past is there as well. And Tim says, would Cummins have enforced Bairstow's dismissal if Stark's catch was given out? I think they're two separate things, but it brings us on to the Stark catch, Lucas, isn't it? Because that was the talking point last night, where Stark on the boundary ran to his left, dived, picked up the ball, had it in his hands, but then as he went down, basically effectively had had the ball underneath his hands and kind of grounded the ball as he slid across the ground. Now, some people are saying, and my initial thoughts were he had it under control before he hit the ground.
Yeah.
But then obviously the decision was not out. I thought it was quite refreshing. And I wish they'd do this a little bit more in football. With referees in football after controversial decisions. But Maria Erasmus, the third umpire, was interviewed this morning ahead of the game, and he basically just wrapped it all up. He basically said, you need to have control of the ball, but you also need to have control of your own body. And when he's falling to the ground like that, he doesn't have control of his own body. And then by the time he does gain control, he's grounded the ball on the ground, so therefore it's not out. And he said, you know, like, equally, if you catch the ball and you've still got forward momentum and it takes you over the rope, it's a six. You know, whilst you're still moving, you haven't got full control of your own body, and therefore it was a not-out decision. And I can see that. I've got no problem with that at all.
I've got no problem with that at all. But where the hell is Mitchell Stark supposed to go? Is he supposed to just be in thin air?
He's grounded the ball, hasn't he?
Yeah. I when I looked at it, I thought that was out because it was he gobbled it. He didn't. It wasn't like it bubbled out of his hand. It was moving around. It was a clean catch as you ever see. Just stuck. So I was a bit confused. I think, you know, Ricky Ponting came out and said he was confused by it. Glenn McGrath said it was another.
But he did. Take
No, absolutely. No, that's not. I'm not debating that. He did use that ball to hold momentum. But I thought the Cameron Green one was way worse.
There needs to be something. I mean, because Mitchell Stark, I can understand him thinking, I got that in my hands. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. But maybe when he saw the replays later, he might have realised. Glenn McGrath went off on one. Glenn McGrath, for him, went mad, didn't he? He was absolutely incensed by it. Yeah, how dare you, kind of stuff. I think ultimately they got to the right decision. But whether those rules need maybe just looking at a little bit, I don't know. Because it felt like he caught it, but obviously then he grounded it. So
when I heard, by the way, to answer Simon's question, there's no way Pat Cummins would have revoked that in any circumstances. Never in a million years. Yeah. You're kidding. Looking at it before, the umpire, what's his name? The third umpire.
Maria Erasmus.
Came out and said what he said. You know, I disagreed with that. Because like I said, he was in full control of that start. There was not one point where he looked like he was going to drop it. Now, I understand that his body was moving, but like I said, Mitchell Stark cannot vanish into thin air. His body cannot stop it.
I get where
he's coming from.
The problem comes when he steadies himself and balances himself effectively by resting on the ball on the ground.
And that I get from Erasmus. I get that. 100% get that, but just looking at it, just looked out. You know, like I said, it was far, the Cameron Green was far worse. Yeah. That for me wasn't out. So there needs to be more rules that need to come out with this thing, because there's more confusion than ever. If we get players like Wiggy Ponting, he may be a little bit biased, come in and say, you know, I'm confused, you know, then maybe, yeah.
Just a little bit biased. A teachy-witchy little bit biased.
Yeah, yeah. But if we got people coming out and saying, you know, I'm confused, maybe they need to clarify that. And I think Erasmus did that pretty well, but I still don't agree with that a little bit.
Well, it's the way the rules are, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. We can't
say the rules get burst around.
No, exactly.
We go against the rules for other stuff. Maybe in both situations, the rules maybe need just looking at a little
bit. Yeah. It wasn't Erasmus' fault. He's only reading the rules.
Yeah.
So let's also put that out there.
Gareth's back on. He says basically about broad sledging and saying, effectively saying, how can you sledge when you've effectively square cut the ball to first slip in the previous Ashes tour and stood there? Yeah, what goes around comes around, Gareth, doesn't it? It's just the way it is. I think there is a decent relationship between the two sides out there, but it has just threatened to bubble over a little bit, hasn't it, today? Just a little bit threatened to bubble over. And I was hoping, Lucas, I know you won't agree with this, but I was really hoping that Ben Stokes was going to get England across the line. Because it would have really been fantastic. Three test matches to play, one all, going to Headingley, a little bit of needle between the two sides. No. It would have been perfect, but it's going to be 2-0 going to Headingley. Tim's been back on. He says he didn't think Baz ever did it in a test match.
I don't remember Baz doing that, to be fair.
And so we'll see. There was and Gareth's basically just reminding us of the Jameson catch. Do you remember the return catch where he came down on?
Yes, I do. Yeah,
he grounded the ball on that occasion as well. So there have been instances before.
See, that one I think was also out.
You can't put the ball onto the ground underneath your hand, and so you've caught it, can you? Because you've effectively dropped it on the floor. You just your hand's still attached to it. There was an instance at Headingley, going back to the Bairstow one, they showed a county championship match where I think the keeper for Yorkshire threw the stumps down like Carey did today. In that game, it was not out. The umpires decided to give it not out. But I guess you've got, obviously, TV replays and what have you, which you don't have in the championship match. They're able to see it's in one fluid motion and able to do it like that. I've still got friends, though, today, who are messaging me as we speak saying, that's an absolute disgrace. He should have called him back. It's not against the, it's against the spirit of cricket, blah, 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 blah. Where, as an English supporter, where your wrath should be isn't against the Australians and it's not against the rules. It's against Johnny Bairstow for being a dopey git and just walking out of his crease without checking. Yeah. That's the person he should be angry with. I'm sure he's angry with himself. Once he's had time to reflect about it, he'll be thinking, what on earth was I doing?
But it's not their fault. It's Bairstow is the only person to blame. It's Johnny Bairstow. That's it.
And it takes a lot for me to blame a Yorkie.
He was
just a bit dopey today. He was a bit dopey. Yeah. Tim says, fair play to the Aussies, however. And we have to give them credit, Tim, I'm afraid. fair play to the Aussies, however. They have won the last seven matches against us. 6.5-0, he says. But 2-0 up. Five-match series, very rarely in Ashes history has that been overturned. So going to Headingley, England will still be talking the baseball talk, I'm sure, and we'll still be talking about positivity. Three matches to go. We need to win all three to get the Ashes earned back. But Australia are in a pretty good position now, Lucas, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's only happened once in the history of the Ashes where someone's gone 2-0 down and won. And I think that was in Australia. Can't 100% be certain of that, but pretty confident. But anyway,
time to make it two then, isn't it? Time to make it two.
Yeah, exactly. to agree with your point, ideally, you know, as a neutral, you'd want Ben Stokes winning that. As Australian, no. As an Englishman, yes.
Before we develop that, the Gareth's come back on. It says, Baz ran out murally while Sanger was celebrating for 100. I think after the retirement, he did apologise to Sanger. You can watch the video on YouTube, apparently. So there's a controversial bit. The second time from Gareth was he did it to Mufu, the player from Zimbabwe. So they're the two times that apparently Brendan McCullum, in some people's view, would use skullduggery. In other people's view, played within the rules and actually got a legitimate wicket.
The Cricket Badger podcast is fueled by coffee. Take a look at cricketcoffeeco.com for some excellent speciality coffee for cricket badgers. Expertly roasted and ethically sourced, the coffee is fantastic. cricketcoffeeco.com. Quote Badger with your order and you'll get 10% off.
Just going back to the overall series then, 2-0 up, the Aussies are going to be feeling pretty good. But one of the key factors that they're going to be missing going forwards is Nathan Lyon. Because, I mean, that was really sad to see, to be honest. I mean, I obviously, as an Englishman, I would have liked to have gone through the series without Nathan Lyon picking up any wickets whatsoever. But I seen him interviewed. I quite like him as a fella.
Yeah, and
kind of when you saw his calf had gone, it was almost immediate. You thought, this is serious. This is going to be, this isn't cramp. This is going to be a problem.
Obviously, you know, watching, I couldn't believe it. My heart sunk. You know, he's such a wonderful guy, nice guy. Very easy to get along with. Played his cricket in Adelaide before he moved to New South Wales. Was actually a groundsman, James. Curated groundsman.
Yeah.
So, you know, Adelaide boy, now he's moved to New South Wales. That story was actually pretty amazing. Nathan Lyon, you know, as a curator, you know, the South Australian coach, Darren Berry, was looking for spinners. And he saw Nathan Lyon do some warm-ups. And he invited Nathan Lyon into the nets. And it said he only took him 3 deliveries to say, right, Nathan, you're playing the whole season with us. Mm. So just 3 balls in the nets.
You know, Lahore Calendars, Yorkshire got a bit of a thing going with them. And they have massive trials. And they bring people from, you know, they go out into the sticks, basically, in Pakistan. And they invite people down to say, come and show us what you can do. And their first audition, it's a little bit like X Factor. You go through different rounds.
But
the first audition is basically face 3 balls in the nets with a bat or bowl 3 balls in the net. The coaches can see whether you're worth another look. You might miss all 3 balls with a bat, or you might bowl 3 wides. But if they can see you've got a little bit of pace, or you've got something about your action, we can work with that. Come back for round 2. And that's probably all Nathan Lyon did, wasn't it?
That's all he did in the nets. Well, having said that, our batting at that time was pretty average. So probably made him feel like $1 million. Sorry to potshot South Australia. Not that I need to do that every day. I'm already enough trouble just potshotting them. But no, that story of Nathan Lyon is just unbelievable. When he got injured, you know, I was completely heartbroken because, one, he's such a nice guy. The two, he's the one Australian bowler that is irreplaceable.
Were you expecting him to come out to bat?
Absolutely not. I could not believe when I saw him limping down the stairs. I could not believe that. I thought, how absolutely stupid. Whoever made that decision, stupid. But it was Nathan Lyon himself.
It was him, wasn't it?
Management. Yeah, I thought that was completely stupid, unnecessary.
What did they have though? 15 runs, which could have been
15 runs.
Didn't they? In the great scheme of things, if Stokes had stayed out there for another 20 minutes, that 15 runs would have counted.
Yeah, and Nathan Lyon came out and said, you know, I love this team. I'll do anything for this team. And that's the type of guy Nathan Lyon is. And he's obviously gone for the series. You know, there's no coming back from that. And
he'll be going home, won't he? He'll be going home now.
If he goes home, I don't think – so they've got Todd Murphy in rating. He's the reserve. If he goes home, I don't think Todd Murphy will play, because if Todd Murphy's playing, you know, maybe Nathan Lyon can give him some mentoring advice.
Yeah, they could keep him just as a bit of an additional voice. Yeah. Although he did say this morning he was trying to keep out of the way in the dressing room to let them just get on with it, because he didn't want to be a distraction. But if he's there for a reason, then he's not a distraction, is he?
No. So if they send him home – I'll be really surprised if Todd Murphy plays, but if Todd Murphy plays, I think Nathan Lyon will stay.
Todd Murphy looks a little bit like a geography teacher, doesn't he? He's kind of got his glasses.
The little professor. I don't call him in Australia.
4 Test matches played, and he's taken wickets, isn't he? Best of 7 for, and he's got a little bit about him.
Well, here's one. If you don't know much about Todd Murphy, here's one that came out of nowhere. Came from the State Premier League in Victoria. Played in the Sheffield Shield. He was basically picked as a domestic bowler, just a domestic bowler for cover for Swepson, for Lyon. He wasn't supposed to play at all. And then, you know, there were some injuries and they picked Todd Murphy. He came in, took a 7 in the first innings against India, or so the first match, you know, bowling around the wicket, off stump. Has an arm ball, so he does have natural variation, has an arm ball. As we saw with India, you know, he was bowling in that leg stump, trying to straighten, very successful. After that, India managed to figure him out. He was still good, but he wasn't as effective. My personal opinion, I don't think he'll play. I think
you need a spinner at Headingley.
Yeah, I get that. But, well, I was going to say they'll use Travis Head, but they didn't use him at all today, which is another thing we'll probably get into.
I mean, Travis Head might be enough at Headingley. It's not like a massively spinning track, but the recent history at Headingley has been that the pitches have been very batting friendly. You know, kind of the old Headingley used to be a seamer's paradise, but it's not like that anymore.
So if
450 plays 400 in the first innings, you're going to probably need a few overs from your spinner.
You may not know, Travis Head actually does bowl a lot of overs for South Australia and the Sheffield Shield. He's actually sometimes picked as the front line spinner. It's just that Australia's attack is so potent, he doesn't bowl much. Otherwise, he would probably bowl like Joe Root. So he's more than capable. We saw him in Sri Lanka. He puts more revs on the ball than Nathan Lyon. So if the pitch is turning, he'll turn it. We saw that in Sri Lanka, where he took 4 for 10, just completely blew out Sri Lanka's second innings in the first Test match.
Just going back to Nathan Lyon, the friend of mine I think he tweeted this actually. He said, all of the Lords, Long Room, all the people in the crowd standing to applaud Nathan Lyon. Why is nobody actually just helping him up the stairs? Hopping down the stairs. They're all standing there applauding as he was limping past. Just give him a hand. I thought it was a really brave act. He actually played the short ball better than anybody, because I was thinking he's a little bit like a kind of a coconut in the coconut shies. But the comments made by, I think, Ricky Ponting and Kevin Peterson. Ricky Ponting's was more tongue in cheek, I felt. He was kind of having a little bit of a laugh about it. But Kevin Peterson I don't know if Kevin Peterson's got the ability to actually recognize humor and nuance and a little bit of sarcasm.
Yeah.
But he was kind of repeating it as a potential strategy by Australia.
Yeah.
To effectively send Nathan Lyon out there to have his head knocked off and then be able to bring in Todd Murphy as the concussion replacement so they could actually bowl England out in the final innings. As it turned out, didn't need him anyway. But I thought that was that. And Nathan Lyon came out in his press conference and said,
"Yeah, he did.
I think that's really off the mark, because I've lost one of my mates, Phil Hughes, obviously.
Yeah,
lost his life being hit on the head by a cricket ball."
Yeah, I didn't see this. I didn't see it for 1 second like that. Now I know Nathan Lyon brought that up. I didn't see that as a callous comment. That never went through my mind. I just thought, and I'm like, come on, KP. That's just another KP comment that's gone off the wall there. But I didn't see any malice, I didn't think of it was any malice or anything to do with Phil Hughes. You know,
I don't think he's a nasty man, Kevin Peterson. I just think he actually thinks it through.
No, he didn't.
No team is going to send, whether he's not going to play the rest of the series or not, no team is going to send a member of their side out to basically get injured, more injured than they already are, just to win that Test match when you could probably win it anyway. And I've kind of on Twitter, people say, well, the Australians have got this history of cheating, I won't put it past them, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You don't risk one of your mates' lives.
Yeah.
And the helmets might have been improved, everything like that, but a proper bang on the head can cause you all sorts of...
At the same time, I didn't, as much as I love Nathan Gary Lyon, I thought that comment was necessary when he brought up the Phil Hughes thing. I thought that was a bit unnecessary. For the context, you know, that's how Nathan was feeling. Mm. So he said how he felt, but I don't think that's what it was just one of those things from Kevin Peterson where he didn't think it's one of those silly. Didn't they apologize on air? They apologized on the broadcast.
Ricky Ponting said that's not what they meant.
I
didn't have an issue with what Ricky Ponting said, because he said it tongue-in-cheek. He said it kind of like, But Kevin Peterson's kind of said, well, that's food for thought, isn't it? As if that was a real strategy. So if anything, it was KP for me that needed to come out and actually put the record right. But what Ricky Ponting was saying, you know, we weren't obviously suggesting that people were hoping he was going to get hit on the head, but it was actually... In Ricky Ponting's view, it was England shouldn't have been bowling short because that brought that potential scenario into the equation. It was actually in England's interest to pitch the ball up to Nathan Lyon than to actually get him becoming a concussion substitute and having Australia at full strength again. So that was the only thing. But Kevin Peterson needs to engage his brain sometimes for me.
We didn't have a good test, Kevin Peterson. I don't know if you saw, but there was a photo about it with him with Strauss. That looked really warmish, didn't it?
Well, they do have a history, though, Steve.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I am aware of that history because it's sport over in the Ashes a bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's more than one instance, isn't it? There's something Andrew Strauss said about him on air when he thought the microphone was off, which I won't repeat. And then there was obviously Kevin Peterson under Strauss passing information to the South African club, whatever. You know, there's a long history there between those two. And somebody had said to me that they'd had a round of golf or they'd done something and they'd kind of made up. But there's a difference between being bosom buddies and actually tolerating somebody, isn't there? And I think they might be at the tolerate level rather than the bosom buzzy level just yet.
Jacob and I sent the Badger a message, and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
How do you see Headingley then in terms of Australia? Any particular changes? Because it was like a little bit of a scene from Saving Private Ryan at one stage this test match, wasn't it? Ollie Pope's gone down with a shoulder injury. Ben Stokes as well. I mean, Ben Stokes limps regardless, doesn't he? He just carries on limping through. I mean, Ben Stokes got cracked on the end of his elbow today by an 86-mile-an-hour ball, which would have probably made me cry. Put me out of any kind of action for about six months, and he just had a deep breath and shrugged it off and carried on. He's hard as nails, that bloke.
No, one tough cookie, one hard yakka, as they have that slang in Australia. He took an absolute battering, and at the same time, when I said just moments ago, I said that it was pretty silly that Nathan Lyon came out, but it was 15 crucial runs, and he loves his team. I thought it was very stupid that Ali Pope came out. I thought that was completely unnecessary either.
He seemed to be okay batting, didn't he?
Yeah, the injury is clearly obviously, but when he came out fielding and then there was a moment where he wouldn't lead with his left arm and then he was trying to soccer defend like a soccer player defender and then he rehoned his shot. I thought that was completely unnecessary. I didn't really like that because that could have potentially ruined a career, AC joint. Well, we saw that with Simon Jones with his knee. It was never the same. So I thought that was a little bit silly. But like I said, maybe Pope had the same reasons for Lyon. He just wanted it. He just loves his team, loves his country. To answer your question about changes, on the England point of view, they've made it quite clear they're not going to change unless there is injury. I thought maybe Zach Crawley has played his last game, but they'll keep Zach Crawley. Maybe Jimmy Anderson. I know you want to speak about Jimmy Anderson. I don't think he's had the best two tests. I don't think the pitches have been there for him. Having said that, the pitch was there in the first innings for him. He did nothing with it, absolutely nothing, when there was that green tringe. So maybe he needs rest.
He was getting it to swing on day one, wasn't he?
But
Just going back to that first session, I was on commentary, and England beat the bat about 50 times on day one. This test match could have been very different. Because I was saying on commentary, my fear was that England are going to... I mean, I don't think they got the length completely right, but they'd beaten the bat so many times. There was a couple of inside edge cuts just past leg stump as well, various things the Aussies. If it was a loose shot at a play, they missed the edge, didn't get the edge. Any bit of luck went for Australia. You get days like that. I was concerned that in England's innings, it might be the reverse because you sometimes see one team get a load of luck and play and miss and play and miss. Then a bowler comes on in the next innings and every single play and miss ends up being an edge to slip and they're out cheaply. As it was, England got out in a completely different way to the short ball. But as Tim's saying there, both teams will have to replace players. Lyon, obviously. Pope, obviously. I mean, it's not been confirmed yet about Pope, has it? I don't think, but that doesn't look good, certainly for the third test match. Anderson looks tired. Basically, Tim's saying that Stark looks tired, but why does he look tired? He's only played one test match. Hazelwood, tired. Robinson, tired. Broad, tired. Green, tired. Cummings, tired. Stokes are all cooked, he says. If England's squad is stronger, we have a chance at Leeds. that this is one of the things that maybe England have missed a trick with, the fact that they've tried to score for 460 overs or whatever, and
yeah.
You're only putting 60 overs into that Australian pace attack, aren't you?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, because they score so quick. So they score 400 and 500 one day, and by lunch day two, you know, they bat, or within like three sessions, they're back bowling because they score so quick. And if a batsman, also if the batting team can't wear the bowling down, that's okay. But with batting of Australia, it can be very, very taxing.
Yeah.
So it was also taxing for the Australian bowlers today in that second innings, when it was completely unnecessary to rotate the same bowlers. Probably get into that a little bit later.
In terms of the Jimmy Anderson thing you're asking me about, because I want to try and keep this to an hour if we can today, Lucas. Gareth's asking, has Jimmy played his last test match? The answer to that is no, because he's going to be in the squad for the rest of this series at the very least. But I just wonder with Jimmy, there's a few players in this England side, and rightly or wrongly, both Australians and Englishmen treat the Ashes cycle as almost like a retirement cycle as well. If you're going to go, it's usually after an Ashes series. We see a clear out sometimes, don't we, in a couple of retirements at the end of an Ashes series. I wonder if Anderson goes at Old Trafford. If England, especially if England lose at Headingley, the fourth test match is at Old Trafford, which is his home ground. If the series is done and dusted by the time they get to Old Trafford, he may think that could be a good way for him to finish test match cricket. Anderson's got nothing to prove. Anderson's done everything possible. Yep. He is a legend. He is a great at the game. And I don't use those terms lightly, because we sometimes call people that aren't great, but Anderson is a great.
He's a legend.
He is right up there. All of the Aussies respect him. All of the English people that he's ever played with respect him. The crowds respect him. And, you know, I want Jimmy Anderson to go out on his own terms. I want Jimmy Anderson to have the send-off that he deserves to have after playing so utterly brilliantly for England over the last two decades. He is an absolute god of English cricket.
Yeah.
And if he chooses to go out at Old Trafford, then right behind that, I'll go to Old Trafford and clap him off myself, because he deserves a really good send-off. And he doesn't look happy this series. The first pitch he moaned about, I don't think this pitch gave him too much more. He doesn't look like he's enjoying this series at all. The only his real contribution today was to get peppered by Stark with the bat in hand. I would like him to bow out of Test cricket on his own terms, in his own way, rather than go on just a little bit too long and for people to start to turn against him and demand him to be removed from the side. I don't think he's offered too much with the ball other than his nous and what have you. And I just wonder if this might be, very sadly, the last we see of Jimmy Anderson.
As we know, David Warner, you know, he said he's going to retire at the end of the Australian summer against Pakistan at Sydney. I have a different perspective. But if a player like Jimmy Anderson, who is a legend, there's no doubt about that. I won't even debate that. Saying, I'm not, well, he hasn't said it, but he said, basically saying, as he said, I'm not enjoying it. Pitch in the first pitch was just too hard, couldn't do anything. You know, after the green tinge wore off, you know, it became really the same pitch. There was no demons in it. It's kind of disappointing that a legend of a game has to, you know, doesn't feel like playing cricket anymore, because
we're surmising that part of it, aren't we?
Yeah. Of course. But he
always looks grumpy. Yeah. But
yeah, no, he is. Yeah. But to push out a guy, if a guy has lost all confidence, we're not saying he has, but because of a pitch, that's pretty disappointing. I don't think England have looked after him here. You know, not England, but the way that the philosophy of Brendan McCallum's baseball style, hard pitches, bowling a lot of overs, not getting results. I think that's a bit disappointing, but that's the way they play. So as you said, I would like to see Anderson also go on his own terms. And if that's his own test match at Old Trafford, so absolutely be it. Having said that, he hasn't really announced this retirement. He hasn't said anything. He said he's just going to keep going and contribute to the team. So damn it, he could be back. Knowing Jimmy Anderson, he could be back to the Australian Ashes again in 2025.
If we're looking at the cycle of the Ashes, and it's over 2 years before the plane goes away to Australia again. So I can't see Jimmy still be going then. And then you wonder with Jimmy Anderson, the next tour is India away, which is not going to be particularly up his trouser, is it? So you wonder if he's going to just look ahead to the next few weeks and months and think, I've got other things I could be doing here. do I want to go to India and bowl 30 overs in a day and go for none for 50? Or do I actually want to go out on my own terms? And Old Trafford, fourth test match, could be the perfect time for him to go out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tim is asking, is karma for Bairstow for rugby tackling the Just Stop Oil protester? That was bizarre on day one. I saw George De Bell say he hopes that none of the players get any kind of comeback for their intervention in the protesters. Having Bairstow carrying a protester the full all the way to the boundary and then sort of effectively just dropping him off for the stewards or whatever to detain. I thought that, yes, it was obviously a lot of people thought it was hilarious and it adds to Johnny's kind of reputation a little bit. And I'm glad nothing happened, but I don't want that to become a precedent. I don't want for future sides, whether it's in England or anywhere, to kind of take the law into their own hands effectively, because that's what you employ security guards for.
Yeah.
Because the Just Stop Oil protesters are, I think it's an admirable cause, but they're obviously getting in the way. They're trying to disrupt a little bit to get themselves on telly and the orange powder and what have you. We've seen it at the snooker, we've seen it at the horse racing, we've seen it at the Pride Festival over the weekend, all over the place. But I think Ben Stokes kind of got his hand across one of them. Johnny Bairstow just picks one up and carries him off. The danger with that is, how do you know they're peaceful?
The
Just Stop Oil protesters have all been peaceful so far, but you only take one idiot with a penknife in his pocket or something to just stab Johnny Bairstow in the stomach, heaven forbid. And all of a sudden, a player's intervention doesn't look quite so clever, does it?
The incident that comes in mind when you said that was Steffi Graf at the French Open.
It was Monica Seles as well.
Monica Seles, sorry. When a protester came on the court and stabbed her, so... having said that, my perspective is that Johnny Bairstow was only taking out the trash. I get the cause, like with you, but I think there's a time and a place.
I think we will, without getting too political on here, but I think we'll look back in 50 years' time, if we're still alive, at the Just Stop Oil as being ahead of their time, a bit like the suffragettes standing up for a very important cause. Yeah. But blimey, they're getting in the way of everything, aren't they?
I get the cause, but it's just becoming a nonsense now. You know, this game has no. We are getting political, so I won't mention it much longer. But this has nothing to do with that. This has absolutely nothing to do with that. We're just here to play cricket, here to play something that we love. It's got nothing to do with oil, with what you're protesting. So I applaud Johnny Bairstow for getting that idiot out of there. I agree with you. We don't want to set a precedent for cricket players or any sportsmen doing that. And that's my take on that.
Just don't want to see. He was quite entertaining whilst it happened. And Johnny Bairstow having to hair off to change his shirt and get the orange off his shirt and all the rest of it. Made 10 minutes of quite entertaining telly. But there's just a danger if future teams take a protester into their own hands. It might not end quite so nicely. And the security guys are there for a reason, aren't they? And I think we should just remember that. But that was one of the iconic images of the National Series, wasn't it? They got Nathan. I mean, there's been a few. Nathan Lyon hobbling down the stairs and we're going to come out to bat. Johnny Bairstow carrying off a protester. There's been a few. It's been a good test match for photographers, shall we say.
Gone
through the Lord's
test. They've got their money's worth, haven't they?
The home of cricket with all of these things happening at it. The photographers have made hay while the sun has shined. Is there anything, before we finish today, Lucas, is there anything you want to get off your chest? Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, it's the Pat Cummins tactics in the fourth innings. My God, have you not learnt anything from 4 years ago under Tim Payne?
Answer's no.
They were lucky today, Australia. If Ben Stokes came in swinging when they were 100 down instead of 170, 150, they would have won that match. This is why I'm not saying, 2-0, 3 to go. Oh, that's why I'm not saying that. Mm. We got very lucky. And in the end, probably Ben Stokes got tired. The one thing at Headingley that Ben Stokes did was smack anything leg side. Anything short, leg side, smacked. What did we bowl today? short leg side. So we learned absolutely nothing from that. Also, we didn't rotate bowlers. Why did we not use Travis? So we don't even know if the pitch would have spun James. Probably not, but we would never know.
Yeah.
Why not bowl him for two overs if the pitch is benign? We can go back to our bowlers.
And the other thing, why when Ben Stokes is basically picking up anything that's short and swinging it at him deep square, why is he persistent bowling short to him?
It's brain dead from Pat Cummins. He had a meltdown. He had a meltdown.
Andrew McDonald, who's the head coach for Australia, there was a period where I think he was frantically trying to get a message out to Pat Cummins.
Yeah, he was on the walkie-talkie.
It's something different. We're going to lose this test match.
they just got completely carried away.
Yeah.
Brain dead cricket. Pat Cummins is very, very lucky.
Do you think 4 years ago started coming into a few people's minds? Because Steve Smith, there's a lot of those players were there 4 years ago.
Oh, well, absolutely. Well, it seems like they were talking to, you might as well have Tim Payne captaincy. Because that's what Pat Cummins did. Do exactly what Tim Payne did. So of course it did. And you know, let's take nothing away from Ben Stokes. He had an unbelievable innings, amazing. But the one shot he got you in Headingley is the same shot he did today. Short outside leg stump and smacking him.
Ben Stokes is amazing though, isn't he? To be able to come in and play an innings of literally, I mean, at Headingley it was three different acts, wasn't it? On the no gears at all on the first evening. Played normal cricket and then went bonkers. And he was doing the same today. And to be able to pretty much at will loft somebody over deep square. And these are good bowlers. No, these aren't. This isn't just Fred from down the park. You've got Haywood. You've got Stark. You've got Cummins. And to almost treat them with disdain. It's amazing how he's able to do that. But I mean, he was good.
I'll wrap this up very quickly. It's unbelievable what he did. I take absolutely nothing away from what he did. But just any chance someone can use a brain down there if this happens again. I think Ponting was the only one that made sense. Why would you do this? Why not put it out? If you're going to bowl short, put it outside off. That was very poor by Pat Cummins. Now, to quickly answer Simon's question of changes, I think they will not bring in a spinner. I think they'll bring in Nisa or Boland. I don't agree with dropping Stark. He's just played the one test. So is Hazelwood.
I thought Stark was really good as well.
And yeah.
I thought he was the difference, really.
Yeah, he was. I'll give him credit. He was actually pretty good. And they made the right call, picking him and not Boland. But I think, why would you rest Hazelwood and Stark after one test? I think Australia would want to win the third test and get that out of the way. Then they can probably start resting Cummins. I think Cummins will keep playing as long as the series is alive. Now, today they bowled so many overs because even when Stokes got out, the game was pretty much over. He still bowled paces. What are you doing, man? You've got spinners there at Pat Cummins for a reason. Use them up. So that's something that they completely lost their heads in. And like I said, if Ben Stokes started hitting when they were 100 down, they would have won that game because they did the same ridiculous nonsense as they did in Headingley. Unfortunately, Ben Stokes probably got tired and it was too much for him, but it was just brain dead stupidity from Pat Cummins.
Just to round off then, I know you're going to be happy because obviously the Aussie women are doing well. The Aussie men are 2-0 up. Other than mathematically, these two Ashes series are pretty much done and dusted, aren't they? Unless there's going to be something ridiculous happen over the next three test matches in England's favour. But I was really hoping when Ben Stokes was doing his thing that he was going to get them across the line because there'd have been a bit of needle after the Bairstow thing. There's a little start, a bit of a rumpus going on, one all going to Headingley because that's what this series, because we really bigged up this series. It was going to be, I thought it was going to be quite it has been tight. And I think England, if England look back and are honest about how they've played, they've got carried away with their own hype with Bazball. Yeah. They've missed some opportunities along the way. England could quite easily be 2-0 up going to Headingley and they find themselves 2-0 down.
I agree with that. I do agree with that.
And that is a crying shame from an English perspective because I think they've wasted opportunities.
Yeah.
Whereas Australia have been pretty solid. You're right to have your rant about the last hour or whatever, but they've been pretty solid throughout. They've played clever cricket. We've not even mentioned Steve Smith's century. He's man of the match in this test match, and he was tremendous, always is. Yeah. I mean, the amount of times, Lucas, when I was commentating on day one, where Stuart Broad bowled a straight one to Steve Smith, and you could see Broad, his hand going up, in celebration that he got through the defences and he was going to be plum LBW. And Smith comes down and wafts him through mid-wicket. It's crazy.
Yeah.
How many times? I don't know why Broad's not realised yet that Smith does this to him. But Broad...
I remember the appeal. where Steve Smith got out, he was like shaking his head saying, I've hit that. So that was also a bit amusing. Before I do wrap up, what's your feelings on the umpires? I think they've had a poor series. I don't like to umpire bash because they do a good job. I think they've been poor this two test match.
I think it's a very hard job. I think we underestimate how hard that job is. And when you see them criticised for not giving an LBW when it's just clipping leg stump.
Yeah.
In the old days, Lucas, when there wasn't all these replays and we couldn't tell where that ball was going, anything that was remotely clipping leg stump, they'd have said not out to all of it. Any possibility that was going down leg side, not out, move on. In a way, it's actually harder to probably score runs these days because you probably get more LBWs now than you ever used to. I think it's a tough job. I don't think they've been perfect, but I don't think they've been horrendous.
Yeah, well, you know, when you got the RS, it does make them look bad.
Before we finish, please use batter out there instead of batsman. I've been on Twitter. It's just one word. It doesn't matter to, you know, in the greater scheme of things, it does not really matter if it makes one or two young girls actually think this might be a sport for me rather than actually move on and play something different. It's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing. Inclusivity is a good thing and it doesn't take a huge amount. And the amount of people that seem to be just a little bit insecure about stuff and don't want to change and everything, it doesn't actually really affect you too much to actually just change your tinker a little bit with your attitude, and it could actually not impact on you. All the kind of the ICEC thing, all of those recommendations and things in the ICEC report, all of those things that we can change with cricket, all those things we can do to make it a more level playing field for race, sexism and elitism are good things. It just means that you carry on enjoying cricket in exactly the way you're doing it now, but you just have different people sat next to you enjoying it on a genuinely level playing field. That can't be a bad thing.
No, I 100% agree with that. And if people follow me on Twitter, they would know that I don't follow the women's game, not because I don't like it, because I just don't follow it. But I'm just on the women's Ashes. I'm very happy that was a fifth day test, because literally they're four. If that was a four-day test, there would not have been a result. So I'm very glad whoever changed at the ICC or whatever, a five-day test, that was a great decision. And I'm glad they got a result from that.
I think they are starting to listen to the women and actually give them a little bit more of what they want, playing on test match grounds and getting a little bit more, well, the excitement. I mean, the one good thing about the 100 is what it's done for women, the women's game in England. Obviously there was quite a lot of tickets sold for the matches. There was quite a big house, big crowd for the T20 last night, and which went right down to the wire as well. So it's been a good sit. In the same way, I mean, to be honest, in the same way as the men's series has been very, very close throughout and the Aussies have got home, it seems to me that the same kind of narrative is going through the women's series as well. There's not actually that much between the two sides, but the Aussies are just getting home and so far have taken both games. So unfortunately, the Ashes series they're not dead, mathematically still alive. Yep. It's going to take an awful, it's a huge comeback from England to actually do anything from where things stand at the moment. Next test, Headingley, starts on Thursday, Lucas, so it's not too far away, is it? Not too far away, so looking forward to that. And I will talk to you again in between times after Headingley when hopefully it's 2-1.
Yeah, hopefully. Not hopefully, that's wrong.
You always do that.
I always do that. So thank you for sucking me in once again, James, for baiting me. Thank you and appreciate being on. Thank you so much.
Keep watching Gareth's YouTube channel. Keep listening and watching the Cricket Badger podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at @cricket_badger. It's on the screen there. And Lucas, how do they follow you?
You can follow me on LucasR32 Sky or @LucasAdelaideUni.
So thanks, Lucas. Thanks to Gareth. And thanks to everybody out there for watching. Listen later on the Cricket Badger podcast platform as well. And we'll see you after the third test. Cheers, everybody.
Podcast Network.